Okay, so we'll have two questions this week. We'll see how long it takes us to get through them. Just a couple of questions that came up. One is as follows. I got the same question from two different people. You may or may not be aware, I don't know if we've ever discussed this, there are a lot of Jews who work in the business of reselling tickets. And there are a lot of interesting shilas that come up when you're in that business. So one shila that came up, I just feel like I'm too far away from it. One shila that came up, that two different people who are in this business have told me. Let's take the guy that asked me this morning. The guy that asked me this morning is an owner of Pittsburgh Penguins season tickets. And as the owner of season tickets, he's entitled to buy playoff tickets at face value, right? And once you have playoff tickets at face value, you can resell them for like a lot more than face value. That's where you make your money. People are in this business, they say during the regular season you break even.
No, you lose money.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah. And then in the postseason, that's where you make your money. So he has Penguins tickets. The Penguins are playing a game. Did?
Yeah.
They're playing game 7 tonight.
Right now.
So right now, oh yeah, we know where we're holding. So the Penguins might make the Stanley Cup Finals if they win tonight. If the Penguins make the Stanley Cup Finals, this guy is going to make a lot of money because he has a good number of tickets apparently, and they can be sold for the Stanley Cup Finals, you know, for a significant premium. But apparently it's industry standard when you have season tickets of one team and they're playing another team. Now, if the way it is now, if the other team were to win, he would make nothing because he only has Penguins season tickets. Who are they playing?
Ottawa.
So the Senators. Ottawa Senators? I'm not a big hockey guy. So the other team if the other team wins, he'd make nothing. So apparently it's become industry standard to hedge your bet. How do you hedge your bet? You actually, the Penguins happen to be the favorites. So if you were to go to Vegas and put down $1,000 on the Ottawa Senators, let's say 5 hours ago, and the Senators, you put down $5,000 on the Ottawa Senators, and they win, you will get $2,700 back, meaning you'll make $1,700 off the deal based on the odds makers. Okay, so that's the Matthias as he presented it. So if the Penguins win, he's going to make, let's say, I don't know, $5,000 from selling, just picking numbers, from selling the tickets. But he doesn't want to make nothing if the Senators win. So if the Senators win, he wants to be able to make money. So now he'll put down $1,000 that he'll lose if the Penguins win, but he's okay with that because he's going to be making $5,000. So he'll have a $4,000 profit. If the Senators win, he'll at least walk away with a $1,700 profit, and that will be a good day at the office. So his question is it permissible to do that? Meaning under normal circumstances, he's assuming he wouldn't be going to Vegas and putting money on sporting events. That would be problematic in some way or another. But given that he's doing this, this is what people who work in this industry do, it's a pretty standard practice, does that somehow make it more permissible than it otherwise would be? That is question number one.
What?
Gambling.
Gambling.
Yeah, it's gambling.
So there are people that do this for a living.
Yeah.
The question is if you're doing this for a living, is this
no,
a
no, the question
or
is,
stop,
no, no, these people don't gamble for a living. They sell tickets for a living. But sometimes when they're in this kind of situation, they'll gamble to hedge on their
living.
Right.
Because
right. But there's a difference between buying a ticket and selling a ticket, which is perfectly normal business practice. I buy a sitter for $8 and I own this farm store and I sell it for $12, right? That's perfectly legitimate standard business practice versus putting money down on a game. That's gambling, that's betting. So we have to figure out what the status of that is and would it change at all based on the context within which he's doing it.
Business being like stock market in that kind of business framework?
In this, yeah, in the business framework, and in the sense that we'll talk. The other question that came up is a little bit of a lighter question, but I couldn't believe this. Rav Zilberstein in his monthly pamphlet. You see the picture? You don't see the picture?
No way!
He has a picture of a fidget spinner in his monthly pamphlet, and the shiloh that he deals with is. Oh, so I thought it was the Muktzah Shaila because there was a big news story that was going around a couple of weeks ago. Oh, thank you, thank you. A big news story. Do you know how to, like, okay. So there was a, oh, yeah, well, question. There's a big news story going around a couple of weeks ago that the Institute of Halacha and Technology or Tzomet or one of these major places were posed with the question of whether you can use a fidget spinner on Shabbos, and they came out with a psak, yes, but you shouldn't bring it to shul, but you know you can use it on Shabbos as long as it doesn't light up, and you know whatever details they had, which you got to imagine the Institute for Halacha and Technology has better things to do than to, but that was the big, so I thought that when I saw the picture of the fidget spinner, I thought for sure that was the shaila. That happens to be an interesting shaila, and maybe we'll talk about that also. It's a little more interesting than it sounds. The shaila that he's dealing with is la'achrona yatsa mischak chadash hanikra spinner.
Even in Israel, it's
spinner. V'hu kli katan, and he describes what it is. Ledas harbe mehachokrim ze mo'il l'rikuz. It helps people with concentration. That people have difficulty with concentration, they need something to fidget with their hands, and it helps them focus, it helps their brain work when their hands are busy. The Shoel says, Ani lo batuach bekach. I don't know if I buy this. But maybe it helps a little bit. So the question is, Bitfilas Shmona Esrei. Very difficult to concentrate. Sometimes you don't make it through the whole Shmona Esrei with absolute focus, if you could believe it. So am I allowed to use the fidget spinner to help my focus, to help my concentration during the tefillah? Especially if that's what the experts say. That's what the experts say.
I've seen someone use it during the Shmona Esrei.
Yeah, so if that's what the experts say, then it helps you out. I've seen a lot of things happen during Shmona Esrei. It doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily a raya.
What was the problem having on Shabbos in general?
So now we have three questions. We have the hedging your bet on the ticket sales. We have fidget spinners on Shabbos, and we have fidget spinners during davening. Which one do we want to do first?
The second one.
Fidget spinners on Shabbos. Yeah.
Sorry.
Off. So. What? So here's the thing, a fidget spinner that does not light up and does not do anything fancy is not a kli shemlachtel l'isser. If it does light up, and it does, apparently, I don't know, there are all different sorts of fidget spinners, but now someone told me fidget cubes. I said, what does that mean? They said, I couldn't believe this. They said, like, one side has like a light switch. What does it turn on? Nothing. It's just a light switch to fidget with. And another side has like numbers like you would find on a safe where you scroll down, or like on an old briefcase where you scroll down the numbers. What does it open up? Nothing. It's just something to fidget with. So it's like, we've mamish created a human hamster wheel. Yes, you're turning on a light, you're opening a lock. It's mamish a human hamster wheel. It's unbelievable. And people are enthralled with it. We're like the hamster just going around. Wow, I wonder why I'm not getting anywhere. And it's unbelievable. But that's what the world's come to. So the metzius is, though, that there are people like this. You know, I wouldn't believe it if it weren't for the fact that one of my children always needs to be touching something, and like I believe it's like a thing that he can't help himself. Like if he's near a box of tissues, the plastic part will be ripped out, you know, where the tissues come out from, and like the side will be opened up. Like he just needs to be touching and doing things, and you know, at first it's annoying, but then it's like, oh my gosh, he really can't help himself. So like it might actually help someone like that concentrate. So let's assume that Matthias is correct, that there are Yechidei Skula that are aided in concentration by something like this. So what category of kli is it? It's not a kli shemlachtel, the isser, unless it lights up or it does something. Most of the time they do nothing, they're pretty cheap and they do nothing. So l'chora, that would be called a kli shemlachtel laheter. A fork, a knife, a chair, a table, things that you use that don't have any isser involved. So you would say, okay, kli shemlachtel laheter. So that's absolutely permissible. Even a klisha machta l'isser, you're allowed to use the tzorach gufo, the tzorach makomo. See, back when I was young, many years ago, they didn't have such fancy things called fidget spinners. What they had instead was pens. We had pens. And what people would do if they needed to fidget is they'd spin their pen around their fingers like that. Yeah, I could do it. Right? And you'd be doing this all day. I remember I had a chavrusa that had a quarter that he would just like flip on over his fingers all day long. And I found it very irritating, but he would do that. And he swore it helped him concentrate. He said that it helped him out a lot. I thought it took away a lot of his concentration because every time he dropped it, it drove me nuts. It took away my concentration, I can tell you that. But one of the Rebbeim in DRS told me today that when he was a Bachur, one of the guys in Yeshiva, I think it was in Eretz Yisrael, asked one of the Rebbeim if they can flip a pen on Shabbos because they needed to help them concentrate. So, that would be a klisha melachto le'isser, a pen. And klisha melachto this year, you're allowed to use l'tzarech gufo, l'tzarech makomo. So is this called l'tzarech gufo, that you need the pen and you're using it l'tzarech gufo?
You
so,
can take out the ink.
Okay, let's say even with the ink, it's a klisha melachto this year. The question is that considered l'tzarech gufo? So one could argue that that's called l'tzarech gufo. I'm using it for what I want to use it for. Although, let's see. What am I using it for exactly? I'm using it to fidget, which means for nothing, right? I mean, I'm not using it, I'm just touching it and messing with it, but not doing anything.
But it doesn't say that in itself can
be... Okay, so even if it's not called a tzarech kufa, by klisha melachto leheter, you don't need tzarech kufa. By klisha melachto leheter, the halach is shulchan aruch pasuk zim shin ches siv dalid, a fork, a knife, a chair, anything like that, is mutal l'taltel even if it's not l'tzarech kufo or makomo, but Shulchan Aruch says if it's shalol l'tzarech klal, there's no need whatsoever. Then it's asa l'taltel. Then you're not even allowed to move a klisha melachto leheter if there's no tzarech at all. It's based on the Gemara in Shabbos Taf Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Beis, Kuf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, that the Gemara tells us that initially when they instituted the dinim of muktzah, they said all kelim are muktzah, and they made only three exceptions to the rule. There were only three things that were not muktzah, and then hitiru v'chazru v'hitiru. They started expanding the list because it was unlivable. You couldn't touch anything. You could not touch, but you couldn't move anything. So hitiru v'chazru v'hitiru till they were matir everything except for those things that are klisha melachto l'isser. So they're matir klisha melachto l'heter. There is a machlokas in the Gemara where Abaye over there says that they were only matir, even a klisha melachto l'heter, they're only matir l'tzarech gufo makomo, but not even to move it mechama l'tzel, not even to move it to protect it. Whereas Rava says, no, even mechama l'tzel, even to protect it, you're allowed to move it. And all the Rishonim Paskin like Rava, obviously, because it's not one of the Yal Kigan. So a Klisha Melachto L'Isser, you're allowed to move L'Tzarech Gufo L'Tzarech Makomo. Klisha Melachto L'Heter, you're allowed to move not only L'Tzarech Gufo L'Tzarech Makomo, even to protect it, Mechama L'Tzel, but not for nothing. You can't move it for absolutely nothing. So the question becomes, those are the only categories that the Gemara and the Rishonim really have. You have gufo makomo, you have to protect it, mechama l'tzel, and you have for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Is there anything in between those categories? Meaning if I'm not protecting it and I'm not really using it, because I'm not doing anything, I can't describe what I'm doing, I'm just like I have a fork on the table and I'm just touching it and moving it and flipping it over, let's say. So it's not l'tzarech gufo, it's not l'tzarech makomo, it's not mechama l'tzel. So is that by definition for nothing? One could argue that if you're going to look at the Gemara, where the Gemara is saying, oh, they were matir, they were matir, they were matir, and the Machlokas is how far they were matir, so it goes mechama l'tzel and no further than that. And if it's not to protect the item, that by definition becomes shelo l'tzarech klal. The Ran in Masech Shabbos says that, quote some who say, yesh omrim, that shalol l'tzarech klal is aser, and his raya is that there were only three kalim that were originally mutter. So even though they were matir more kalim, they weren't matir legamri. I mean, those three were still unique. They were still the only ones that were completely mutter. Everything else still retained some muktza remnant, which would make it aser to move when there's no tzarech at all. So, like I said, so the question becomes, when you're just fidgeting, is that since it's not Litzorach Gufo, it's not Litzorach Mekamo, and it's not Mecham Litzel, does that mean it's therefore Shalol Litzorach Klal?
Is having it to fidget with meaning for concentration, that's not considered Litzorach?
Right, so if you need it for concentration, so I mean, we're first dealing with the Shabbos question, which means everybody. I can't imagine that all the people that have fidget spinners need it for concentration. You know, those who are, like we said, Yechidei Skula. So maybe you could say that is a Tzorach, if you need it for concentration. But if you're just doing it to fidget, because it's there, so it's just something to touch and something to hold. So then maybe that would be considered Shalol Litzorach Klal. However, there are poskim that assume not that way. Shalol Litzorach Klal means you mamish have no, are getting nothing out of it. But if a person is a fidgety person, or they enjoy it, they enjoy seeing how you can't see the shape of it when it's spinning, or it's a toy. Meaning, there's a difference between just moving your fork around for no reason, even though a fork is more reason to be makel because it's one of the three kalim that was never us. But there's a difference between moving something like that around for no reason versus playing with a toy the way it was meant to be played with. So even though, can you explain why it's entertaining? Yeah, because it's the technology of the wheel with the spinning thing. Someone said that's like the rollerblade technology that they use, and that you told me that? Someone told me that today. That they adapted to this handheld thing.
Oh, so, what? It's just a bearing.
Yeah, so okay, but that might entertain you, and that might be interesting to you, as opposed to a fork, which you're just moving around for no reason. So I would think that would be called playing with a toy, which means, first of all, it is Litzorach Gufo. You don't even have to come to Shalol Litzorach Klal. It's Litzorach Gufo. You're playing with the toy the way the toy was meant to be played with. And even if you wanted to argue it wasn't Shalol Litzorach, it's not called Litzorach Gufo. It's hard to say that it's Shalol Litzorach Klal, that it's for no use whatsoever, if it's something that's providing a person with some sort of entertainment. So that's why I would say that the Pesach is really a no-brainer. The Pesach whoever it was that gave that Pesach, you have to go search it online and find out, that's a no-brainer that would be mutted. But then the question becomes, okay, what about during davening? What if you have a person who can concentrate better when he has during davening? So what's the issue? What would be the issue? Yeah. So there are three issues. One issue is that you have to be cognizant, and probably the primary issue to worry about is you have to be cognizant of your environment. And it is distracting to others. I was talking to a boy I learned with today, and he was at the YU graduation. And because he had two siblings that were graduating, a brother and a sister, they were both graduating YU in Stern, and he had to sit there, 10th grade boy, had to sit there for hours and hours of speeches and them calling out thousands of names or whatever else. And, it was not particularly exciting for him. And he was telling me that, it was so annoying because he forgot his fidget spinner. He left it at home. So he said, but the guy behind him did not forget his fidget spinner. And he said it was creaky. He said it was so annoying listening the entire time to the spinning of that guy's fidget spinner, and it's likely to annoy people around you. So at the very least, if you're davening in a place where there are other people, you're not davening biyachidus, so you have to be cognizant of the fact that it is likely to distract others, whether it be the sound, whether it be just watching you do it, whether it be the weirdness of it, it's likely to distract others. Yeah, right, okay. Yeah. So it's likely to distract us. That's first and foremost. Okay, but let's say, no. Oh, okay. So the second issue, let's say you're all alone. No one's anywhere near you. You're all alone. So you're not going to distract anybody. So the second issue is, you're staying in front of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You're staying in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Rav Zilberstein points to that issue alone. The Gemara Maseches Brachos Daf Lamed Beis tells us about a chassid echad that was omid b'tfilah, and a hegemon echad, a certain officer came and greeted him, and he didn't respond. And he waited till he finishes his tefillah, and he said, when I gave you shalom, why didn't you respond to me? If I would cut off your head right now, if I were to behead you right now, would anyone have any tainus on me after the chutzpah you just expressed to me? So he said, wait, let me explain. He said, if you were standing in front of a Melech Basar V'dam and one of your friends came and said hello to you, would you acknowledge your friend as you're talking to a Melech Basar V'dam? Would you do such a thing? So he said, no, I wouldn't do that. That would be a disrespect to the king. It's like this morning I was at a bris and I was talking to my kid's principal. He came over to talk about some sensitive issues going on in the yeshiva, and there was a guy that was like waiting and waving. I'm like, no, you can't, not right now. This is an important conversation. I can't be distracted right now. So a melech must have done. You wouldn't be distracted by somebody else. So he say, and what if you did say hello to your friend while you're talking to Melech Masr Adam? They'd cut my head right off. So he says, Dvarm Kal V'chomer. If you were in front of Melech Masr Adam, you would act with such respect. I'm in front of the Melech Malchim Lachim Kodesh Baruch Hu Shulchai V'Kayim La'adu L'Omi Olamim Alachas Kama V'Kama. So the Hegemon was satisfied and the Chassid was able to go home B'Shalom. So says Rav Zilberstein, if the, let's not even imagine a king, the President of the United States, current or past, whatever, doesn't make a difference. President of the United States is not a king. Never had the power of a king, doesn't have the regal bearing of a king. It's not a king. It doesn't have the same feel of as a king. Would anyone, even with the current president, would anyone sit there with a fidget spinner as they're talking to the President of the United States? No, it would be considered a terrible chutzpah. So you're standing in front of the Melech Malchei Melachim, you're standing in front of Kodesh Baruch Hu, you can't possibly be acceptable. And that is definitely true, I would imagine. I don't think it's become socially acceptable to be omid b'fnei gedolim in such a way. In fact, one could make a significant argument that the same would be true about holding a smartphone to daven from. Would you stand in front of a king, you'd shut the smartphone off, you'd put it on airplane mode before you went to meet the king, or put it away or not even bring it at all. To stand with it, holding it, might be something to discuss, that it might be a violation. And there are all these halachos that relate to the fact that tefillah is ka'omed lefnei hamelech. We have halachos of how we have to dress for tefillah because we're omed lefnei hamelech. The Prima Gadim writes in Simin Sadivav that even if you're holding something that you're not afraid is going to fall, but you can't hold it during tefillah because who stands holding things when they're omed lefnei hamelech? So it seems like a davar pashut that would be the case. However, when exactly during the, let's say, 35 minutes of your normal shacharis, when exactly are you supposed to be ka'omeid b'fnei hamelech? Shmon Esrei. What about the rest of that? Let's say, okay, Shmon Esrei you won't have it.
Depends. In Shema, we know there are certain halachas of when you can, when you can't say hello to a friend.
Okay, now saying hello to a friend does not necessarily mean that it's ka'omeid b'fnei hamelech. I'll give you an example. How about how you have to be dressed for Shema? So what does the Mishnah talk about? You're in the mikveh and it comes time for Shema. So if you can get out and get dressed, great. If you can't, muddy up the waters and be mafsik between the nibal erva, something like that. Can you daven like that? Shmon Esrei like that? No. Because Shmon Esrei, and Rashi explains, Shmon Esrei is omid lefnei melech. By Shema, we're being mekabel ol malchus shemayim. We're acknowledging our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our acceptance of the fact that there is a one and only God, but we're not actually talking to him. We're more talking to ourselves in affirming our acceptance that there is one and only God. Whereas by Shmon Esrei, we are beseeching him. We are praising him. We are talking to him. It is our communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's only by Shmon Esrei that you're actually omid lefnei hamelech. By Shema, you can technically say Shema without a shirt on. And that's fine. What do the Gemaras talk about? A naked person sticks his head out of the house, and is that a liberos erva issue? That kind of thing. I mean, can you imagine? Omid lefnei hamelech? Not exactly, right? So maybe by Shema, you don't have that problem of the omid lefnei hamelech. Yeah?
I mean, first pasuk of Shema, you have to.
So then there's a third issue. The third issue is that you need to have, you may not have to be omid lefnei hamelech, but you absolutely have to have kavana by Shema. There's no question. It's not Kabbalah Salmach Shemayim if you're not having Kavana by Shema. Maybe this helps you in your Kavana, though. So the third issue really is, in general, are you allowed to hold things in your hand when you're supposed to be having Kavana, when you're supposed to be focused? Or do we assume that just the very act of holding something is going to be a distraction to one's Kavana? So there's a Gemara Mesechus Brachos Daf Chav Gimel and Beis. Let a daven holding tefillin or sefer Torah. Amr Shmuel saknu ma'us ukara v'kikar harel keyotzi ben. All sorts of things, anything. And Rashi says because tarud b'machshavaso shlo yiplu miyado v'yispazu shein daito miyushavaslov b'tefila. You're just not going to be able to be focused because you're going to be too busy thinking that they might fall, that you might drop them. And since you're concentrating on them, you're not going to be able to focus on your tefillah. So that's what the Gemara assumes in Maseches Brachos, that holding something. However, the Gemara in Maseches Sukkah discusses why then are you allowed to hold a lulav during davening? And the Gemara says, yeah, because that's a mitzvah. So because it's a mitzvah, it's helpful. The Yosef explains in the name of Shumas Nadashan that anything that's machzar or siddur, you're allowed to hold during davening, because even though you don't want them to drop, but you're using it to aid in the davening. So you can't say libo torah to love. You can't say that it's going to cause you to lose focus. No, it's actually helping you in the davening. By tefillin, it was holding the tefillin in your hand. That doesn't help you in the davening. Sefer Torah bizro'o. But if you're actually davening from it, so then it's going to aid in the davening. I was clarifying. I'm not sure. Still not sure. What about a smartphone when it comes to this? So would you say that when you're davening from a smartphone, it's aiding in the davening, therefore it's just a nice sitter? Or would you say that this is not a sitter. This is something that you don't want. To drop. So A, it may depend on how you treat your smartphone. It may depend what kind of what do you call these things? The otter boxes that you have. Or you could argue that yeah, it's a sitter. But let's say you were holding a fancy crystal sitter. You know, that if you dropped it, it would shatter all over the place. You probably can't daven in such a sitter.
What about the ones that have, like, pictures of people on them?
Right, so that's where the discussion in the postgame, right? Whether you can use such a sitter because it's going to be distracting. Although, there's centuries of tradition where they clearly had such sitterim. But the halacha is in shul, you're not really supposed to have these nice pictures that are going to distract a person. So the postgame are makel if it's above eye level where you're not going to see it. Okay, so you have to figure out all of those sugyos. But what I'm trying to say is that there is room to argue that if you are one of those yechidim, that it actually aids in concentration, and you are not near other people, that it's going to distract, and it's not Shemona Esrei, it's only for Shema, there's room to argue that it would be permissible, right? To fidget. I said, if you're alone, it's not going to distract. So if you have all of those qualifications, you're not going to distract others. You're one of those people that it actually helps you concentrate rather than hinders your concentration. For me, it would hinder my concentration, I think. And you're not davening Shemona Esrei, so you're not Omid Lefnei HaMelech, you could argue that it would be permissible.
Yes, yeah. A lot of people just say, why do you have a spinner? Why do you have the spinner? And they'll say, because it helps my concentration, and they're just really just trying to...
Right, so, again, you have to be honest. You obviously have to be honest about these things. You know, there's no tricks. There's no tricking the Ribbono Shel Olam.
Is this the same halacha with having a wallet in your pocket when you daven?
No, in your pocket is different. You're not physically holding it.
I thought you're supposed to get rid of your wallet out of your pocket. I think they call it like a money bag. Like specifically, the halacha calls it a money bag.
On harabayis. I think so. Yeah. When you daven, I don't know. Oh. It is for you. Oh. Yeah.
Even according to those who say that it's a problem, shulz or klal. Would they permit using
booze spinners? Yeah, because I think it's a toy.
Even
meaning it's a toy that's supposed to... Yeah, that's what I would think, right. Even according to... Even Sfardim. I know Sfardim or Machmer on Klisha Malach Velaheter. I would think that this would be Mutter because it's Tzorach Gufo. Like, I really believe it's because it's a toy and you're using it as a toy.
For everyone?
No, I think for everyone it's a toy. I think it's a toy for everybody. What time is it? Okay, let's try to deal with the gambling question somewhat quickly. So the sugya is the sugya of asmachta. I'm sure you've all studied it several times. The Gemara appears in Masech Sanhedrin Daf Chav Dalet Amud Beis, where we have a machlokas about Mesachik B'Kuvia. Why is it that someone who plays dice, who gambles, is pasul eidus? So there are two possibilities. Rami Bar Chama says asmachta. What does asmachta mean? It's gezel midrabanan. It's not really stealing because the guy agreed to play this game. He agreed that if the Penguins win, he's going to pay me money or whatever. You know, he agreed that that's the way it's going to work. So it's not really stealing, but he put his money down thinking that he was going to win. He didn't put his money down planning on losing, and therefore it's a smachta. It's like stealing on a drabanan level. Rav Sheshet says, no, the issue is eino osek bi yeshuva shalolam. That it's just a person is not, he's not, doesn't know how to treat money seriously. He's not living a life of responsible, with a healthy and responsible attitude toward money and how it should work. So that is the that is the basic gemara. The question is, what's the definition of asmachta? Meaning, what would make something gezel midrabanan? What would make it aser midin gezel midrabanan? So, according to, and there are examples. I don't want to go through all the examples in Shas. If you, there are a few examples that maybe I'll just mention one or two. In Babasu Kuf Samaches, we talk about Reuven owes Shimon $100, and Shimon has a shtar that says that Reuven owes him $100. Reuven paid 25. So now he owes Shimon $75. But Shimon still got the shtar that says that he owes $100. So Reuven says, I'll tell you what. Give the shtar to Levi. If I don't pay you back the other $75 in 2 weeks, then Levi, you have the right to give it right back to Shimon and he'll be able to collect the whole $100 from you again. So Gemara says, that's a smachta. Because when I make such a deal, I'm planning on paying it back within 2 weeks. I'm not planning on having to pay extra. I'm not planning on giving you a shtar that says that I owe you more money than I actually do. That would be an example of asmachta. Or a farmer who says, I'll tell you what, I'm your sharecropper, or I'm your chak, your yaris. If I don't produce, if I neglect my responsibilities, I'll pay you. I'm not planning on neglecting my responsibilities. I'm planning on doing the work. But if it happens, it was something that I never really fully committed to pay because I wasn't planning on it ever coming to that. I wasn't planning on ever actually having to pay. There are other examples as well. You look at Mitzia, Daf Ayin Zayin, other places in Shas. What's the definition of asmachta? So Rami Bar Chama would say, if gambling is asmachta, it's because you're making the condition insincerely because you think you're going to win. No one puts their money down thinking that they're going to lose, and if they thought it was a lost cause, they wouldn't put their money down in the first place. Not that you intellectually believe that statistically you have a better chance of winning, but, you know, I have a gut feeling. That's how gamblers talk, right? I feel it. I feel lucky. I feel it in my veins. I feel, what does that mean? It's garbage. It doesn't mean anything. Meaning, but they believe it because you convince yourself of something that you've invested in. And there have been psychological studies done on this, that this is absolutely true. People, you know, if you ask someone, what are the odds at the racetrack? What are the odds this horse is going to win? And they'll look at the odds and say, well, exactly those odds. If you ask him right after you put $5 down on that horse or $10 down on the horse, all of a sudden the odds are very different in his mind. Nothing changed other than the fact that he put down $10. Same guy, just what is before he put down money. Because that's the way our brain works. We try to justify everything that we do. That's why, yeah, we're no gabadaver, exactly. So that is the notion of asmachta, that according to Rami Bar Chama, I have it in my veins that I'm gonna win, so I don't really plan or expect to give up this money. But Rav Sheshet says gambling is not asmachta. So what does he hold asmachta is? So Rashi in the Mishnah Sanhedrin says that according to Rav Sheshet, it's only asmachta if you believe that you're in control of the outcome. By gambling, you know you're not really in control of the outcome. By gambling on a sporting event, you know you're not in control of the outcome. That's why according to Rav Sheshet, it would not be asmachta. Tosus quotes the Shita of the Ri that if I'm in control, it is asmachta if it's clearly a guzma. And he adds this additional, that it's clearly an exaggeration. When it's partially in my control, it's also asmachta. When it's totally out of my hands, it's not an asmachta. It gets a little more cloudy. What does that mean, partially in my control? I have a certain expertise. I have knowledge that this key player is going to be out or has a head cold or something and is not going to be himself tonight or something. So, not control, but I know information. I think I know more than other people. Not abundantly clear. There are beta time as a third definition. The question is, how do we paskin? So, the Rif and Tosos Masechet Erev both say that gambling is not an asmachta that we paskin like Rav Sheshet. The Rivash says, no, you paskin, gambling is asmachta, and therefore you're never allowed to gamble, because it's asmachta. The Rambam has some interesting things to say. The Rambam in Hilchos Eidos says that your pasul le'edus, if you gamble for a living, ain lo umnas elahu. But otherwise, sounds like you'd be kasher le'edus. So it sounds like he's paskening that it's not a smach, because a smach would be gezel. If you steal even just once in a while, you should be pasul le'edus. Yet, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Gezeilah Aveda that gambling is gezel midirabana. Not only that, even in Hilchos Eidus, he says, you're only pasul eidus ve'elum nuselahu, it's an avak gezel. So he sort of takes both sides, it seems, that it's gezel and that it's eino osik b'yishuv shalovim. So, lahalacha, Shulchan Aruch paskens in Siman Shinayin in Chosha Mishpat, that it's gezel midivrehem. Whether you want to say Torah is in the Rambam, but he does say gezel midivrehem. L'chora, maybe it doesn't pass you le'edus if you don't do it frequently, but gezel midivrehem is usher to do even on occasion. Right? It would be usher to do even on occasion. For Ashkenazim, the Ramah paskins like Rav Sheshes. Now one could argue, okay, so then if I do it on occasion, it's mutter. If I have a real job, one of the guys that asked me this question is a lawyer in a major law firm. I'm sure he makes a reasonable living, you know, as a lawyer in a very significant law firm. But he likes doing the ticket business. He makes extra, you know, it's extra money on the side. So that's what he does. But he doesn't need the gambling, certainly not the gambling element of the ticket business, to make a living. So you could argue, according to the Ramah, for Ashkenazim, Einos Yishuvah Shalolim is not an Isser. Although, one could argue, look, it's not a formal Isser. You know, we've discussed, Isserim Ben Adam L'Chavero, Ben Adam L'Makom, Ben Adam L'Atzno. So good. Gezel Nidivreim is an Isser Ben Adam L'Chavero. Einos Yishuvah Shalolim. Doing things that reflect a sense of not contributing to Yishuv HaOlam may be a Ben Adam L'Atzno violation, meaning to be a person who spends their time in unproductive endeavors, or in really what ultimately become destructive endeavors, it may not possibly le'edus because you're not a gazlan, but it may still not be permissible. I always wanted a taina that even according to the Ramah, you shouldn't gamble at all, because einos yishuv shalolam does not mean that it's okay as long as you do it sometimes. It means that it won't possibly you le'edus as long as you do it only sometimes. But it doesn't make it okay. If there's an activity that when you do it all the time, possibly you le'edus, you should probably never be doing it. Right?
That's a question for us too.
But according to the Shulchan Aruch, there's no doubt. According to the Shulchan Aruch, there's no doubt that it's a smach, that it's gezel midrabanan. So now, let's bring it back to our case. You have this guy. Can you say, Zeno Osik Yeshua Shalom? This is mamish standard business practice for someone in this position. It's harder to call it Eino Osik Yeshuvah Shalom based on the context that he's doing it. He doesn't stam gamble on games. He does this to hedge his investment.
Can you say the entire business is on tickets? Is Eino Osik Yeshuvah Shalom?
Not really, because then you're going to say buying stocks, and you can't say that because you're buying something. When you're buying something that has value, it's hard. You know, there's a big machlokas haposkim about lottery tickets. So whether playing the lottery is considered a violation of gambling or not. So some of the poskim say, no, if you buy that lottery ticket today, you could resell it for that same value an hour later. Meaning the ticket actually has value until the drawing. So yeah, the actual ticket. I mean, if you lose the ticket, so then you lost money. It's not just the ticket is actually worth money. Whereas others say that you're betting on. Now there is in Shulchan Aruch that if you're gambling for the sake of a mitzvah, so then we assume everyone is putting their money in willingly and there's no asmachta issue, and it's just that would be permissible. So for example, a Chinese auction that a yeshiva or a shul or something is running, that all the poskim are makel with. That's one of the discussions by lottery. I think Rav Sternbach says that there are those that want a taina that it's mutter because it goes to pay for education and for, you know, the money that's raised from lottery pays for a lot of really wonderful things. And then, of course, Rav Shtumbach has to add, but not in this Medina Ha'arura where they're teaching up the courses and whatever. Okay, fine. But let's assume that there was something good happening in schools. So then that would be, let's assume that Israeli children are better off in schools than out of schools. So then, you know, you assume that you're doing some sort of mitzvah. Yeah.
And if you say it's a smachtas, you said it's only, the problem is that he doesn't want to lose. I mean, he cares about...
No, the problem is that the other guy whose money you're taking didn't want to lose.
I mean,
meaning your fear with asmachta is not that you might lose, it's that you might win. Right? If you lose, fine, okay, I give up the money. But if I win, I'm taking someone else's money, didn't want to give it up. But, now, if you pass on the Shulchan Aruch, l'chora, it's going to be asmachta. But, one could argue... Right, meaning one could argue that Gezel Midrabanan doesn't apply to a non-Jew. And therefore, it would make it mutter. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch pretty much says so explicitly. Shulchan Aruch in Siman Shin Ayin, right after he says that Kol Kayotzi B'Devarim Elu, after talking about Masach B'Kuvia, what it is, Hakol Asur V'Gezel Midevrayim Hu. Very next line, Yesh Misha Omer. Then he adds, again, how's the Shulchan Aruch understanding Osek Yeshuva Shalom? Not that you have no sense of reality. You shouldn't be doing things that you would call not Yeshuva Shalom. You should be doing things that are inherently productive with your time. So even gambling with a guy, the Shulchan Aruch is going to say is aser, not because you're stealing from him, but you're doing something that's inherently unproductive. But it's harder to say that about something that's a standard business practice in an industry that is a legitimate industry. You also have to keep in mind, on the side, the concern of Dinu Malchus Adina. Most sports betting is probably illegal outside of those places where it is legal. So one has to be careful about that as well. But I think there is an argument to be made that it might be permissible in this case, because you don't get the sense that it's Eino Osik V'Yishuv Shalom unless you just say that the mice of gambling itself. Now, I once spoke about this in DRS, and the kids were asking me about, I forgot what it was exactly, what the nature of it was, but maybe it was to raise money for like a Chai Lifeline or for, I don't know, for some major Jewish organization that's very respected. And I thought with Tzorach Mitzvah that, you know, that something like that. And Rabbi Kamenetsky got so upset at me. He was not happy. Do you know how dangerous it is to say things like, I didn't know, I didn't realize. So you know how many kids we've had to deal with who had gambling addictions, and how terrible and how out of control it can get, especially with a teenager's mind where, you know, limits aren't exactly a teenager's strong point, you know? So it's like, it's something one has to be very, very careful about. So in general, the approach toward gambling, Kach Mukublani, Mimori Virabi, Rav Kamenetsky, Shlita, that when it comes to gambling, the safe answer is always stay far away from it. Don't do it. You want to have, as an academic discussion, is this potentially mutter? I'm not convinced that it's awesome.
Okay, the one I can understand.